I've got something you need to check out. Now, there's ClickUp. If your day starts with 10, 15, 25, or even 40 open tabs, and ends with decision fatigue, because instead of doing your work, you're managing how to manage it. Spreadsheets here, docs there, Slack convos everywhere. It was chaos. But now, there's ClickUp. It brings together projects, docs, conversations, everything in one workspace. ClickUp doesn't just support your workflow, it upgrades it with automation, AI, and customization. It's already trusted by over 4 million teams worldwide, and it helps them finish projects 30% faster. Try ClickUp for free and get 15% off all AI add-ons just for signing up at clickup.com/invest. That's clickup.com/invest. Close your tabs and open ClickUp.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, January 8th, 2025 edition of Invest Talk, and I'm excited for this hour with you, as usual, to kind of go over what's happening in the broader markets and really help you become a better investor. Each and every day, that's our goal, answering your finance and investment questions, bringing you perspective that you can take back to your own personal situation and make better decisions with your money. So that's what this hour is always about. And we're going to stick to that format today and every day. So here we are, ready for your calls. 888-99-CHART is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and then run down some show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question. Now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. This is Jane from New York. Happy New Year. I have a question about Sprout Farms, SFM. It's been on a strong downtrend. I'm wondering if it's a good time to get in or it's lost some momentum. Wondering what your thoughts are. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Looking at Sprouts Farmers Market. Sprouts Farmers Market. This is a name that we had bought a long time ago in 2021, I believe, somewhere around there. Around the $20 level. And it recently, earlier last year, hit a high around $182 per share, but it lost momentum as we entered the latter half, back half of 2025. And we actually sold it. And it continued even lower from where we sold it. And now it's trading around $77 per share. And like you said, it's in a downtrend. And that's the problem, is when is that downtrend going to end? We're not seeing any signs that is going to end in the near term. So I see no reason to be jumping in and trying to catch this falling knife. In fact, it's just been consolidating at these levels for the past few months. And usually after a down move and then a consolidation period, well, it just starts to break down once again. And that's most likely what you're going to see. So that's what I'm expecting. And so I would continue to stay on the sidelines. Earnings growth continues to decelerate as we enter 2026. And I want to see the opposite. I want to see things moving in the right direction, not the wrong direction. And until then, I just keep it on the sidelines. Something I would continue to watch. It's still a good company, good profitability. I still like it. It's a name that we would get into if momentum started to reverse, but I see no reason to think that's going to happen in the short term. So name to keep on your watch list, but this is a lesson for a lot of names out there. You know, you want to make sure that momentum is on your side. And currently It is not in this name. So I would continue to pass on SFM. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we will touch on as much as we can. My main focus point is number one, and that is about the yield curve uninversion. The 10-year treasury yield is finally pushing comfortably above the 2-year yield. We'll explain why this normalization is healthy, but often precedes a mid-cycle slowdown. So we'll dig into that story. We have others on the docket as well. We'll look at the car market, what to expect from the auto market this year. GM After Hours said they're pulling back on their EV investments. So we'll dig into that and much, much more, and some data there. And then winners and losers around the tax cuts as well as tariffs, although we are likely to get a tariff announcement from SCOTUS Supreme Court tomorrow. So that'll be interesting, but we'll dig into that data. And then lastly, if we have time, why the big oil companies might actually be losers in the bid to take over Venezuela and get our big oil companies from Chevron to Exxon in to Venezuela. And the simple answer to that is, well, it's complicated, especially with some of the other investment or business entanglements that these companies have. Because remember, they're international. These are companies that operate globally. And so if you start to maybe piss off some of your other countries that aren't happy about this, well, you certainly could be in the crosshairs. So we'll look at that data as well. We also have voice bank calls. One is on rolling over a 403B to a Roth IRA, as well as Anebulo Pharmaceuticals. A-N-E-B is a symbol. And of course, we get questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. But we're going to head to a quick break. And after the break, we will be answering your questions. We will go over the market activity. But most importantly, like I said, your live call. So give us a call now at 888-99-CHART. If you're listening on the live stream on our website or in the Bay Area on AM 1220, either way, we encourage you to call right now. Once again, the number is 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think is a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about Core in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a live call. Jarek from Halifax, Canada, wants to talk about oil field service companies.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to talk about oil field services. Just with everything that's going on in Venezuela, on Monday at market open, I took some small positions in Halliburton, SLB, Baker Hughes, and Weatherford. I'm just wondering if any of those names stand out for you, and or if it's kind of too early to say whether these companies would see some tailwinds for kind of rebuilding the oil infrastructure in Latin America.
I think it's far too soon to really tell. And frankly, I think the assumption that this is going to A, go smoothly, and B, that these companies are going to willingly put in billions of dollars to improve extraction volumes in Venezuela, I think both of those are assumed way too much. How much Will there be unrest in Venezuela over time because of this history of our regime change operations globally usually creates problems in that country? And then, you know, there's a reason why these big oil names have not invested heavily, because of obviously policies there, but certainly a big part of it too is the instability and the fact that these are kind of like oil sands. They're very similar to Canadian oil, where it's very heavy. It's also very expensive to get out of the ground. And so the break-even rates for a lot of these projects aren't low. You know, what a lot of these oil companies really love are your traditional oil wells, not your oil sands, not your shale oil. They would love to just these easy ones that bring crude easily to the surface. You don't have to crack rock. You don't have to do a bunch of things. And the break-even levels are a lot lower on those type of projects. These are very expensive. And then you add on, the geopolitical risk. To say that they're going to start spending billions on extraction, I think is way, way overblown. So I think the move in these names is not correct. I would not be trying to chase these names, especially after this move.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. Now let's take a quick look at the markets today. And it was quite the doozy, even though if you look at the broader indices, it doesn't look like that crazy of the day. The Dow was up about 0.5%. The S&P was flat, up only one basis point there. NASDAQ down 44 basis points. So that was really the weakness. Large cap growth took it on the chin in a big, big way. NVIDIA down over 2%. Microsoft down 1%. Google and Amazon were the winners. Tesla also up as well. But names like Broadcom down 3% on the day. Micron down 3%. Anything really AI infrastructure certainly struggled. Now, is this the first sign? As I've been saying for a while, are these companies starting to pull back their CapEx spending? And is that going to hit some of these names where there's a lot of growth already priced in? I always use the example of Zoom. Remember Zoom back in 2020 and 2021 when everybody was moving to video conferencing and everyone extrapolated this level of growth out until infinity? And the reality was quite the opposite. It was more of a flash in the pan. And it certainly the growth slowed to a trickle. And now it's a far more reasonable company to own than it was back then. And I think you'll get to that point in many of these AI names. But you're starting to see a rollover in these high multiple names. And so that's really where the weakness was on the day. You also saw a weakness in healthcare. Eli Lilly down over 2%, AbbVie down nearly 4% on the day, as well as Amgen about 3% on the day. So a lot of red there. But outside of that, outside of tech and healthcare, you actually had a pretty solid day. The consumer staples had a big move. So that's also not a great sign, as money is moving out of healthcare and tech and into consumer staples. You had names like Procter & Gamble up 2.5%, Coke up nearly 3% on the day, Mondelez up nearly 5% on the day, Clorox up nearly 5% on the day. So a big move higher in these consumer non-durables. And then energy, once again, up about 4%. So nice little bounce back there. ConocoPhillips up 5% on the day, Exxon up nearly 4%. So, this does show you that this whole thing, oh, we're going to go into Venezuela and we're going to lower oil prices dramatically, it's way overblown. There's so much that needs to take place before you get to real material change in output from Venezuela that it's really months and most likely many years down the line, if at all. And remember, oil prices are priced daily. They don't really care what happens in, 6, 9, 12 months for the most part. It's about supply and demand today. So I see oil prices actually reversing to the upside due to higher geopolitical instability. And then in the finance space, you definitely had some strength. It looks like President Trump is instructing some of his, I don't know how he's going to do this legally or whatever, but It looks like he wants to buy mortgage bonds to help bring down mortgage rates. So that certainly helped housing stocks, helped names like Costco up nearly 4% on the day. So very interesting day on that front. On the economic front, you kind of had a mixed bag. Continuing claims actually surprised to the upside. Consensus was supposed to come out about 1.87 million claims. It came in at 1.9, almost 2 million claims. So pretty big miss to the upside. So the labor market is relatively weak. Now, the Challenger job cuts data, that was a bit better than expected. So, you know, less firings than the market was expecting. However, obviously people aren't getting new jobs. Job creation is slowed to a very slow trickle, and it's pushing unemployment rates higher. So that was the economic news today. Let's see, what were the other assets? Let me just go to here. There we go. You had treasuries were weaker, so rates up with a touch of steepening, yields up about 2 to 4 basis points across the curve. You had the dollar index up 0.2%. Gold was about flat. Silver ended down 3%. And Bitcoin futures were down 0.2%. And WTI was up 3.2%. So that was the market today. Kind of a mixed bag, but really red in tech and in healthcare. Now we're going to a break. My focus point is coming up next. The yield curve uninversion. More answers to your finance and investment questions.
It's a new year. 2026 is here, and so is Justin Klein. He's taking your finance and investment questions anytime. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Short-term rates are dropping. Long-term rates are rising. We explain what this shift tells us about inflation expectations going forward, and we analyze whether the signal is a soft landing or just the calm before the storm. So let's dig into the yield curve. And it can be boring for a lot of people because bonds tend to be kind of boring. But there are a lot of signals in the way bond prices move and bond yields move. And, you know, the Fed has been cutting interest rates recently, and the short end of the curve has fallen and the longer end has stayed relatively high. That means the yield curve overall is steepening. There's about a 50 basis point gap between, this is as of Friday, between the 2 year and the 10 year yield. So that incentivizes banks to lend because their cost of money is the short end, and then they lend on the long end. And that is generally good for liquidity. And if you take a look at the bank lending chart, we're at about a 5.5% year-over-year increase in all commercial bank credit. So that is positive for the overall economy. So that's the first thing you should glean from a steeper yield curve. That is generally positive. There can be caveats, just like anything investing. It's not about one thing. One thing is not the end-all be-all. It's not the one factor that you pay attention to and make all your decisions. But it is an important one. I'll say that. Now, just a couple of years ago, the yield curve was inverted. Why? Because the Fed was raising rates aggressively and the long end didn't move up nearly as fast. Now you're seeing the opposite. Now the long end is still dropping, but just not as much as the short end. Now the common adage on Wall Street is that the Fed controls that short end. And this is why I always say that, oh, the Fed's going to cut rates. People will say, oh, the mortgage rates are going to drop. And, you know, they may, but it's, once again, it's part of the picture. It's not the entire picture. And a lot of times the market already prices that in, especially once the Fed actually announces it. Okay. The market tends to control the 10-year and longer. Okay. Now, all signs are pointing to steepening ahead. Why? Because of the Fed cutting cycle that will probably continue throughout this year and maybe probably accelerate as we get a new Fed chair in, what is it, May, I believe? May is the first meeting where Jerome Powell is no longer the Fed chairman. Now, whether it steepens or not, and how it steepens matters a lot. Now, if the Fed is cutting because growth is falling off a cliff, well, the long end tends to drift down with it. And once again, the Fed will cut. And so it'll have a similar situation as you do now, where the yield curve gently steepens and that overall is stimulative to the economy. And that's what the Fed really wants. But if the Fed is cutting because of political pressure and growth remains strong, well, the long end has a tendency to actually rise and you get a tightening of liquidity. Because now the cost of capital that most businesses and investors borrow at goes up, right? It doesn't, you know, ideally you want that long end and short end to drop and the short end to drop more, right? Because across the curve, no matter what, the cost of capital goes down. But if you get an inflation scare and the Fed is no longer independent, it's getting political pressure, it's still lowering rates, and the market starts to worry about inflation expectations and the long end starts to blow out, well, suddenly that actually could be bearish for the overall economy. And then you add in the geopolitical issues that are going on right now, and does that reduce foreign demand for treasuries, pushing out the long end, and once again, raising the cost of capital across the economy? And it's pretty clear that both the political pressure and the geopolitical concerns are not going anywhere in the next, to call it, at least 6 months, and probably for the balance of the year and maybe beyond. Now, what does that mean for you as an income investor? Well, you have to think about reinvestment rate risk. Everyone got used to it. I had a call yesterday with a client who, you know, was happy with some of their money that was being just parked in treasuries and earning, or high yield savings accounts, earning, you know, 4.5-5%. And now everything is below 4%. And he sees that, you know, that's probably going lower. It's probably going sub 3% by year end. And so what do you do with it? That's what we call reinvestment rate risk, where when a bond matures or you get coupon payments, you're not able to reinvest it at the same rate as you were before. So the sweet spot is in this environment, and that's what we're doing for this client, is starting to invest more towards the belly of the curve, kind of in the 3 to 6 year range in maturities. And that's ultimately the best course of action in this rate cutting cycle if you're trying to still stay relatively conservative, but lock in these higher rates while you still can. We're heading to a break. I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready for your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
Best Talk, 888-99-CHART.
On the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into the story, housing, the lock-in thaw. With mortgage rates stabilizing near 6%, there are early signs that the lock-in effect is breaking, potentially bringing much-needed inventory to the spring 2026 market. That story is tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and let's play another question for you.
Hi, Justin, Luke, Andrew here from Santa Cruz. Got a question about Inubel Pharmaceuticals. Ticker symbol is Alpha November Echo Bravo. My question is, they've tendered an offer to buy back shares at 2.5 times what it currently is. It's listed as $1.18 today. They're buying shares back at $3.50. They want to go private. My question is, what are the risks of riding this out if I don't sell and they go private? I'll be listening for your answer. Thank you. Bye.
What are the risks if they don't sell? Okay, so they're going private is, let me see if I can get, oh, if he doesn't sell, got it, okay. So are they're tendering an offer at 2.5 times what they currently, this is a weird one, because it was up and then it came crashing down. Let me look at, interesting, but this is back in 1222, excuse me. I would listen to the market here. What most people don't understand about this, and just I'm just looking at this, I'll explain what I'm looking at, is that this stock rallied, it looks like, on the news, but has since fallen back down to earth. So they can talk a big game all they want, but the market is not buying that they're going to actually be able to buy back the stock. You know, they only have about, let's see, $10 million in cash. And it's a $50 million market cap. It looked like they were trying and it fell, must have fallen out of bed, because back on the 18th of last month, it fell from about that $2.20 mark to a low recently, about $1, and now it's at $1.20. So your risk here is that that doesn't actually come to fruition. And the market is telling you, this is a great lesson for everyone out there. People can say all they want, but the market will tell you what is likely to happen. Yeah, they're doing a reverse stock split, or they were talking about doing a reverse stock split. Yeah, they want to acquire 300,000 shares at $3.50 per share. This sounds like they're trying to just create some sort of maybe short squeeze. I don't get it, but the market is not reacting. If this was true, if this was going to happen, then the market would have, the price would have gone up, not down. And it got cut in half. So I would just sell it and move on. This is a company that loses money, just playing shenanigans. And it's not an investment. It's just pure speculation. Sell it and move on. Now let's go answer a YouTube comment question. It says, what is a good buy to invest in the demand for magnets? Well, first off, I cannot give you or anybody buy and sell recommendations. So let me tell you about the SEC rules around this show. You'll notice I don't bring up particular companies typically. We don't do that because that's against SEC rules. Now we can answer an opinion and we could say, if you ask us a question about a stock, we can give our opinion about that particular company. But we can't say, hey, here's Apple. Look at all the great things they're doing. This is a great company. This is a great investment. Not allowed to do that. But if you call and ask about Apple, I can tell you my opinion on it. I know it's weird, but those are the rules. And so if you call me up and say, give me a good company to invest in this space. Nah, that's not how this works. Okay. I don't know of any on the top of my head, to be honest with you, right? I could give you, if you ask me about aluminum, I could say, okay, Alco is the biggest, may not be, you know, the best one to invest in, et cetera. But, you know, those type of things. But I don't know of any particular magnet company, to be honest with you. So just for everyone out there, if you're ever asking a question on YouTube or giving us a call, ask a specific company. And I can say, yeah, that's a good magnet play or not, potentially. But yeah, not the way I answer questions. But thanks for the attempt. Speaking of magnets to a degree, let's talk about the auto industry. A lot of magnets go into cars. And the auto industry, it's a big business. A lot of revenue, a lot of economic activity runs through the auto industry. And new car sales in the U.S. are projected to decline this year for the first time in 4 years. This is according to Cox Automotive. They're expecting unit sales to fall from 16.3 million last year to 15.8 million this year. That's even below the 2024 number, which is right about 16 million. Edmunds expects it to go from 16.3 to 16 million. So kind of in line with 2024. And they're citing two things, the slowing demand for electric vehicles and dwindling consumer confidence. So some auto companies have already come out with sales in the fourth quarter. Ford sales were up 2.7% from the previous year. In the fourth quarter, GM actually fell 9% year over year, and Hyundai fell 1% year over year. And a lot of this has to do with the withdrawal of the $7,500 tax credit for electric vehicles. I believe After Hours, GM even came out and said that they are pulling back CapEx for their EV sector or EV division. Toyota's head of U.S. car sales said that prices are likely to go up for us and for our competitors. So this is around tariffs. So tariffs are going to slowly impact this industry, not only domestically produced vehicles, because a lot of those are importing the raw OEM parts. And so that's an issue. Obviously, you're getting labor inflation as well. And so prices are generally going up. Consumers rush to purchase vehicles before the tariffs, as well as before the EV subsidies. That boosts sales in the first three quarters of the year. So now you're starting to see kind of a more steady state car industry now that we're past tariffs. Now, things could change because, of, like I said at the top of the show, it looks like SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, is going to rule on tariffs tomorrow. Now, no, they don't say what they're going to rule on beforehand, but the assumption is you'll get that. So that could change things on pricing, but most likely you're going to see higher prices for cars in the new year. Now, car companies have had a little bit of an issue here with a K-shaped economy. How do you cater to the low-end models where there's, you know, people can still buy those and there's a lot of demand for those low-end models? Or do you focus more on the higher-end models, that those that own stocks, that own real estate, aren't feeling the sticker shock on? And most of them have focused more on the higher end, but that's lower volume. So that's another reason why you're likely to see volumes decline this year. And lowering consumers, they're being hit. Their pockets are being squeezed. You see them trading down to dollar stores, for example, and a lot of them just can't afford new cars, whether they're $20,000 or $200,000. Doesn't matter. They just don't have the money for a new car because of that. Also, maintenance and repair expenses are rising. So this is one thing that's kind of a tailwind to auto sales, is, you know, it's not as cheap anymore to fix your current car. Auto insurance is also up 13%. So that's a bit of a deterrent as well. So that's kind of a headwind. That makes it so, hey, insuring your car becomes a lot more expensive. So maybe you want to keep that cheaper, older car, and you're not in the increase there is not nearly as high. On average, consumer price index rose 5% over the same period. So you're seeing 13% increase over the past 5 years in auto insurance and 8.7% increase in maintenance and repair costs. What else? Yeah, that was pretty much it. That was pretty much what's going to happen with the auto industry this year. It's certainly not going to be a tailwind to GDP. Now let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier.
What's up, InvestTalk? I had a question about UPS. I'm looking to see if you guys think that we're approaching a time where we could enter into UPS for a long-term hold. I'll listen on the show. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Looking at United Parcel Service, UPS is the symbol. And this is now in a nice little uptrend over the past few months. And the momentum is good. Now relative strength is 62. It's above all major moving averages. And, you know, is this front running? Maybe the tariffs being rolled back potentially? And I've said this for a while, that UPS is an attractive business. It's just a matter of when will the momentum turn? And the reality is it has. It's now turned. So I actually like it here. It's still trading at low to mid teen multiple based on forward-looking earnings. It's obviously a very, very strong business. over the long term with profitability. When that profitability has come down, you know, these things tend to revert to the mean. And everyone bought physical goods during the pandemic, and that kind of mean reverted over the past few years. But now it's kind of getting back to a steady state level. Return equity is still around 34%, which is very, very strong. Good, solid balance sheet. $4.4 billion in free cash flow. That's well off the high of 2022, but still well above where we were pre-pandemic, when free cash flow was only about $2.2 billion. So it's a business that is more profitable than pre-COVID, has a pretty strong balance sheet, and the momentum is good. So I'm going to give UPS a thumbs up. It's United Parcel Services. Now, this Invest Talk with more than 62 million downloads. More answers to your questions coming up. So hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Long-time listener, thanks for everything you guys do. I'm interested in moving my 403B over to a Roth IRA. I know that you guys have talked about this before, but can you just explain that process once again? And then if my wife and I file jointly, would I be then able to open up two Roth IRAs, one for me and one for her, if we still fall under that annual income? Again, thank you so much, and I look forward to hearing your response on the next podcast. Bye.
Thanks for the call. Now, yeah, simply, yes, you can open up two Roth IRAs, and if you fall under the income limits, you both can contribute to them. That's beyond the rollover. That's completely separate. So I believe there's new limits. I believe it's $7,500 during this year. Let me confirm that for you. It was $7,000 last year. It might have gone up to $7,500 this year. But when it comes to your 403B rollover, yes, you can roll that over. And this goes with whether it's into a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. It's usually pretty simple. You call your provider of your 403B or 401K or whatever, and you say, I want to do a rollover. They're going to issue you a check. Sometimes they'll let you send it directly to wherever that Roth or traditional IRA was opened, at Schwab, Fidelity, whatever. And maybe they'll let you send it there. Most often, they'll make you have it sent to your house, address of record, and then you'll mail it off to the broker. So just kind of depends on which provider of the 401k it is. Now, remember, rolling into a Roth IRA gives you tax consequences. So whatever you roll over, a 403b, that's tax deferred. Now, you might have a Roth 403b. I don't know. You have to check on that. Some people have a little bit of both, a little bit of money in a Roth 401k and a traditional 401k. And so you want to separate those out based on account types. But make sure that if you roll it into a Roth IRA, that you're comfortable paying that tax in that particular year. More, the better course of action for the vast majority of people is to roll that old 403b or 401k into a traditional IRA. No tax consequences, opens you up to as many investment options pretty much as you want. And then at a future date, then you could roll it over into a Roth IRA. Typically, that is the time between retiring and taking Social Security. That's where kind of planning comes in. That's something we do for clients. It's kind of map out that Roth conversion strategy so that you can avoid big RMDs once you get to RMD age. Make sure that you don't hit a Medicare supplemental surcharge. All of that, you want to make sure you try to avoid that. So Roth conversion strategy is smart, but make sure you do it when you're in a low tax bracket, not in a high tax bracket. Hope that helps. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday. It's help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
Well, first off, never take one man's opinion as gospel, including my own.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, If I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Oh, hi. It's Raj from New York. I had a question about Cardinal Health, CAH. I wanted to know what's your long-term projection on this stock. I see it's been doing well last 5 years, up 261% in 5 years. Looks like it has a good cash flow. The PE is about 30. Please let me know what I thought to keep the stock for 5 to 10 years or longer. Thank you.
We're looking at Cardinal Health. It's been doing well, and it's in the medical device field. And generally, we like the medical device companies. It also has some branded and generic pharmaceuticals as well. So it's in the insulin space also. So their business is pretty strong. Last quarter, revenue's up 22%, earnings up 36%. Now, the momentum has started to slow, so it's in a consolidation period, but I would probably be buying it on dips. I would rather buy it, though, when it fills the gap from October, which would be down around 165. That would be the area really to pick it up. Right now, it's around 202. So I would be patient on it, but it's definitely a name I would pick up because I think it's a very consistent, strong business with good growth. And yeah, I would own it, but I would be patient on picking that up. Thanks for the call. That was Cardinal Health, CAH is the symbol. Now let's talk about the headwinds and tailwinds of the policies for the economy that and the average consumer that passed last year. Now, the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index started the year at 71.7, but ended the year at 52.9. So clearly throughout the year, the average consumer was not getting happier. They were getting less excited about their future. And that's because of a couple things. One is the tax cuts, which certainly helped a lot of people, at least a tailwind overall to lots of consumers. But then you had the headwind of some benefits being cut as well as tariffs. And the distribution is uneven. And really, if you're not in the top 30% of income earners, you actually came out net negative. This is according to Evercore and their estimates. So overall, there's about a $200 billion tailwind from tax cuts, about $125 billion effective for last year, and about $80 billion worth of tax cuts for this year. So we're talking about last year and this year combined. But tariffs are headwinds because of higher costs. And then once again, the reduction in things like food stamps, Medicaid, change to student loan eligibility and repayment, all of that, that adds up to about $135 billion in headwinds. So net-net, $200 billion in tailwinds, $135 billion in headwinds. That is a positive for generally the economy. However, the problem is that it's not spread evenly. If you are in the bottom third of income earners, net-net, you are absolutely a loser from these policies. If you're in the middle income, it's a little more mixed. A lot depends on your impact with tariffs, right? Which basket of goods you're buying and how much tariffs are really impacting those prices. But net-net, in aggregate, if you net out, once again, per decile, meaning top 10%, next top 10%, et cetera, and so on to the bottom 10%, only the top 30% will come out positive. And obviously the top 10 came out with the best positive. And the issue with that is that the wealthy don't have a high marginal propensity to spend. If you have a lot of money, a few extra dollars in your pocket, is that going to change your lifestyle very much? Is that going to change your spending habits very much? Probably not. Okay, so tariffs have a disproportionately high impact on the low-income consumers because they have a higher share of their income on goods and services that they spend it on. The wealthy spend it on services which aren't really impacted by tariffs. So households in the bottom 10% income bracket are expected to see a $2,160 less annually as a result of these policies. That's about 5.6% drop of average income starting this year. The top 10% will see a net benefit of $9,670. This is all according to Evercore. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein, and today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, retirement, whether it's all really working for you, whether your strategy is in line with the new trends as we enter 2026. Well, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button, and schedule a time with myself or Luke. And please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify or over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.